It's really funny in that these what do I want questions become what do I want to want, right? We can create the system and choose to want and desire and be motivated to do anything we want. But first, we need to create that capacity to do so.
Hey, friend. So excited for this bonus podcast episode with Chris Sparks. This podcast is focused on a new workbook of Chris. It is a precursor to his book called Inflection Point. I attended a workshop led by Chris and the Force and Function team in 2018, and I loved it. The principles and the work behind it are now in his new workbook. Please make sure you're a subscriber to Chris's newsletter at theforcingfunction.com to receive the workbook. This episode is meant to be a standalone episode, and it's even better with the workbook. Think of it kind of as like an audio guide. This episode is also available on my website at portfoliocareerpodcast.com. In building and growing your portfolio career, it is so important to focus on productivity and knowledge systems with habits and rituals for compounding improvement to lead to new and better opportunities and growth. Trust me, I'm not perfect at this, but listening to this podcast and taking small and regular action with reflection is what I'm trying to do. So I'm on this journey with you too. So here we go with Chris. Cool. Welcome to Portfolio Career Podcast. Your host, David Nabinski, is here with Chris Sparks. How's it going, Chris?
Fantastic, as always.
So great to have you back for this bonus part two episode. And for this episode, I thought it'd just be a great idea to use this conversation here as a way to work through the workbook. And in addition to the amazing prompts and exercises that are in it. So what I thought we would do is, starting in kind of chapter six, it's a little bit more prescriptive, and that we would start there. The chapters 1 through 5, we hinted at some of those in the prior podcast episode as well. So definitely check out the prior podcast episode for more information and more context related to chapters 1 through 5. But this 6 through 10, we're going to dive a little bit deeper on that. So starting with chapter six, it's on time. What does time mean to you, Chris, and how do we maximize our time?
So I think most people think about time all wrong, where there's three dimensions we can improve our time, right? One is that we have more hours of work, and that's where you get into people who are doing silly things like trying to sleep less hours, or you know they're at their office for 16, right, which clearly has diminishing returns. The other one is you think about efficiency. How can I get more done in less time? And that's where you get all of these productivity hacks where people spend a bunch of time doing keyboard shortcuts and relatively surface level improvements to try to extract more out of time. I think the highest leverage way that we can improve our time management is treating our time like a portfolio and making sure our time is spent on the most important things. So the highest leverage habit for time is planning. Where is the best use of our time? And regularly reflecting, where is my time going and how reflective is that of my priorities? By spending our time on items of higher average importance, we will automatically be using time better. Think about it as like, presumably you could do 1 hour of work worth $1,000 an hour, or 10 hours of work worth $100 an hour. And in our day-to-day, all the time, we see these activities that have very differing levels of value, but that we treat equally, where we say, I did 8 hours of work today, which is absurd. No one actually does 8 hours of work. But those hours aren't equal. It should be like, what was the value of the work I did today, irrespective of how long it took?
Okay. So as you're working through this workbook, Chris, and thinking about time, or what resources should people or apps or processes should people implement to get a better sense as to where they're spending their time?
Yep. So I think there's three steps to better utilization of time. First, knowing all the things that you could potentially be doing. So I call this a project menu, a place where you store all of the things that your time could be going. And secondly, prioritizing that list, right? So determining of all the things you could be doing, which is the most important, right? So first we have a menu. You think about going to a restaurant and ordering, here are all the things you could order. And prioritizing is essentially cutting down on the menu, where instead of 20 things you could be doing, here are the three that are actually important. And these are the only three we're going to think about. So in the workbook, I detail my processes of generating all of these potential projects you could be working on, and then identifying which of these projects is going to be the best use of your time. From that, the next step is to plan when these things are going to happen. So I say, if someone takes away one habit from this workbook, it's curating their weekly review. I love the timeline of a week because it's zoomed out enough so that you can make decisions as far as what is actually important, but it's tactical enough in that you can look at the constraints you have and decide, given where I am right now, what makes sense, what can I do? So this is essentially the three-step process to maximizing your time. First, knowing where your time could go, then deciding where the most important places are where your time could go. And then third, given that you know what you want to do, when are you going to do it? Working around your current constraints, making sure that you maximize the time that you have, given what is happening.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's really interesting that you said related to time and planning, that people always think planning has a negative impact to their actual performance. I don't want to plan because then that pulls me away from the output or the performance. Maybe talk to us a little bit about how planning actually helps you going forward.
Yeah, because of opportunity cost, the biggest cost we could have is doing the wrong thing. I like to think about planning as having 10x returns, and that every minute I spend planning returns 10 minutes. Because the most important thing we could be doing is more important than everything else we could be doing. Taking the time to decide what that most important thing is and having a plan in place that makes sure that our time goes towards that most important thing, that's the highest leverage thing at any given point, right? If we aren't sure what the most important thing is, that is the most important thing to decide what it is. So I really encourage people to give planning the time and space that it deserves.
Perfect. Okay. All right. Then let's move to chapter 7, attention. We've got everybody's attention listening to this podcast. how should people be optimizing their attention in a day?
Yeah, so the metaphor that I like to use here, you think about if you've ever opened up your task manager on your computer and all the different processes running, and for every process running, it's taking a non-zero fraction of the computer's resources. In the same way, thinking about your mental RAM, your mental bandwidth, everything that you're thinking about, every open loop you have, every process that you're considering, every decision that's on your mind is taking a non-zero percentage of your attention. And so I really try to help people internalize this idea of operating in serial rather than parallel, where the notion of multitasking is a complete misnomer. We can only do one thing at a time, and we think we're doing more than one. We're just rapidly switching back and forth. Most people listening to this podcast are probably aware of the cost of context switching, where every time we switch from one activity to the other, it takes us 20 minutes just to get back to the point where we were before, right? We have to reload this mental RAM just to get back to where we were. So it's really, really critical to avoid distractions. Because these distractions, it's like switching and checking Facebook for a minute doesn't cost you a minute, it costs you 21 minutes because that's how long it takes to get back to where you were before. I find that attention comes from constraints, right? With time, we were talking about the menu, constraining the number of items that are available for you to do. In the same way, once you decide what is important, where you want to direct your attention, we maximize our attention available by putting constraints around the other things that could come up, right? The often told Warren Buffett story of someone writes down their top 20 goals, and the first five goals are your to-do list. And someone asks, okay, so like number 5 through number 20, like that's what you do when you have extra time. And Warren says, no, that's your not-to-do-at-all-cost list. Because of opportunity cost, right? your number six item on your list is not a to-do, it's a distraction. It is distracting you from doing the most important thing. So in this chapter, I talk about some of my very tactical ways to eliminate these distractions that get us off task so that we can focus on one single task in serial for a longer period of time. And that this is a muscle that we continue to build. And counterintuitively, the easier we make it for ourselves to pay attention, the better our attention will be, right? We create this expectation in ourselves that when I sit down to do something, I will do it for the time allotted. I will single task. And so there's many different distractions in our day. People, you know, digital, I think phone is a really big one. And there's very easy science-proven ways that we can reduce these distractions so that we can focus for longer. And the very interesting and similarly counterintuitive takeaway is that if we can improve our ability to focus, we don't need to spend as much time working. Because you think about it, someone says, oh, I've been sitting in the office for 8 hours working. How long have they actually been focusing on a single thing? I found that, we talked about the power hour, if I focus on a single task that's very, very important to me for 1 hour, I can get more done, quote unquote, than it would take a lot of people 8 hours because they aren't actually focusing for longer than a few minutes at a time. So this is a really, really powerful way to work on that efficiency that we talked about in terms of time management, is just putting more of our resources to the task at hand. And so, yeah, I recommend checking out this chapter for tactics that anyone can set up, systems in their environment to create these constraints that will allow you to focus more intensely for longer periods of time.
Okay. And after we figured out where to put our attention, how do we go into that, those tasks and those opportunities with having our best self and the right energy to, you know, execute on them? So love to talk about chapter 8, energy, which is a really interesting topic. I feel like maybe it was a couple of years ago when people say you have, you know, high energy or low energy, I always thought it was like the most and really interesting comment, but it makes a lot of sense. And it's hard for you to pick up on the energy that you're representing. But I think it's so important to have peak energy when you're doing peak work. So maybe talk to us a little bit about how we can optimize our energy.
Yeah, I think everyone talks about not having motivation, and really motivation is solved by having high energy, where we are mistaking that we are doing something we don't want to do for not having the capacity available to do it. Energy is very straightforward to understand, but a lifetime of habit installation to master and solve. So there's three dimensions of energy that I like to highlight. First is increasing your baseline. So how much energy do you have available in the day, right? How large is your gas tank, so to say? Secondly, reducing energy leaks. So there's a lot of things we do that drain energy. Think about when you're talking about conversations, having a conversation that's going nowhere, that is just being around this person, is you can feel your energy draining. There's all of these activities in our day to day which drain energy faster than others. And if we can eliminate these leaks, we can have our gas tank go longer. And then finally is reducing the activation energy. We'll touch on this when we get to procrastination, but the hardest part of doing anything is getting started, right? The hardest yoga pose is the first pose. The hardest part of your post is the first word that you write, right? It's getting started, this activation energy. Think about water boiling, where once you get to that point, everything goes downhill. The more we can make the things we want to do easier to do, the less energy that will be drained. I think people are so funny when it comes to energy, and this is where today's shortcut mentality is so obvious, is that everyone wants the shortcut, right? That's how we have an exercise industry. That's how we have a diet industry. When the best practices for energy basically haven't changed in thousands of years, right? 99% of your energy capacity is, are you exercising? Are you eating well? Are you getting enough sleep? And then I would add the corollary there is like, how's your relationship with caffeine? And so it's not really hard. You don't need nootropics. You don't need these crazy fad diets. You don't need to do Uberman sleep schedule. Really, it's make sure that you're getting outside and exercising every day. Make sure that you're eating healthy food that makes you feel good, right? Anytime you eat something and you don't feel good afterwards, just don't eat it again, right? That's what the elimination diet is if you don't feel good, just don't eat it. And then get 8 hours of sleep, which means 9 hours in bed. This is how you maximize your energy baseline. And so In the chapter, I give my recommendations for making small, sustainable improvements that compound over time in these three areas. You know, how I've found to install healthy habits of diet, sleep, and exercise. And the last thing that I would say is, like, your energy changes throughout the day. Usually we have a bimodal distribution, a twin peak, where we have an initial peak early in the morning. This is where we're most creative, where we have our most willpower, where we can do the hardest things. And so just shift your hardest and most important things to the beginning of the day. Most people talk about, oh, this afternoon dip after lunch. This is basically built in by nature, right? This is hard coded. So shifting the things that are very easy, managerial, calls, emails, to this afternoon period. And then often we'll find we have a second smaller dip in the early evening, right before dinner. And so, like, this is like a nice period of time to do some other, like, kind of finish the day strong type activities. And it's less that we are trying to eliminate this afternoon dip and more that we are shifting our most important activities to the periods of higher energy.
I love that one point. I just want to reiterate that one. Motivation is solved by high energy. Mm-hmm. That's fascinating.
It's something you had Tiago on this podcast, and something that he talks a lot about as far as mood as engine, right? So one of the key findings in psychology coalesces around this idea of self-signaling, that we infer our state based on our behavior. You can extend that to we infer our values and beliefs based on what we do. And so if we are low energy, right, we're slouching, I don't feel like getting out of bed, our brain is looking for a reason why we are behaving such a way. And so what is actually caused by low energy, we will attribute to, oh, I must not like what I'm doing. I must not be excited by it. So counterintuitively, if we increase our energy, we will increase our motivation to do what we want to do, right? We will think, wow, like, this is just so easy. I must really like doing it. And by affecting our energy, we can choose to like anything we want to like, right? Just by doing something regularly, the brain will say, oh, wow, I do this all the time. I must really like doing it. It's really funny in that these what do I want questions become what do I want, right? We can create the system and choose to want and desire and be motivated to do anything we want. But first, we need to create that capacity to do so.
What do I want to want? Love that. And I'm grateful for Tiago Forte being on the podcast. His work, particularly around the rise of the full stack freelancer, has been a big motivation to the Portfolio Career podcast. So definitely check out Tiago's work at Praxis and the podcast as well if you're interested more about Tiago. What do I want to want? Fascinating. I think that's a really good kind of transition into chapter 9, which is around accelerated learning, right? So once we maybe have a breakthrough and figure out what do we want to want, maybe, you know, new fitness goals, relationship goals, business goals, skill goals. How do we start achieving that quicker? How do we learn how to do that, Chris?
Yeah, it's really important to internalize that with enough knowledge and experience, we can literally do anything, right? That there is no box. The box is self-created. And I create these extremely ambitious versions of my future self. And I know that with enough iterations of improvement, I can get there. That it just becomes like, what are the skills necessary to achieve what I want to achieve? And so this chapter is my system for learning how to learn, that everything we want to do is learnable, and pretty much everything we want to learn has been studied and deconstructed by someone else. So given the multitude of information out there, clearly information is not the bottleneck. It's our ability to process, retain, and apply it. So the step-by-step here is first deciding what are the instrumental skills, what are the steps along the path necessary, thinking about your hero's journey, right? What do you need to learn in order to become the person you need to become to achieve your goals? Identifying these instrumental high leverage skills. And then the core practices of learning, right? Optimizing for mastery, optimizing for retention, improving your signal-to-noise ratio. These are principles that I introduce and then show you how I do it, where I want to maximize the time spent reading or watching, listening to podcasts, watching interviews. And not only am I listening and watching and reading the right things, am I able to extract that information, right? Am I able to convert it into something that's actionable that I will be able to retrieve when I need it? Are the things that I'm learning, am I just consuming, or is this actually changing the way that I think about the world, the way that I think about myself and my work? There are ways that we can ensure that we get the most out of our time spent learning so that it's always a productive activity. And then once we decide what we want to learn, I talk about how we can sculpt our environment to make it what I call downhill. Metaphor here, you're riding a bike, and it's the difference between riding uphill, you know, super effortful, and going downhill where you can just coast. And you can transform your environment and so that it's supportive of your learning goals, so that the learning just happens automatically, that you're surrounded by it. This is how, you know, learning becomes relatively effortless, and that you're constantly exposed to new dimensions that you wouldn't even have known about before for improvement, that you never hit points of diminishing returns because everything that you learn alerts you to new frontiers, new ways that you can apply and expand upon your learning. This all really builds up to the concept of deliberate practice, which is specifically knowing what is in the way of your goals and creating a plan to overcome these bottlenecks so that you can achieve what you want, right? Having the end goal in mind, identifying what are the steps necessary to get there. And I outline how anyone can create a learning plan so that they maximize their time spent learning and get to what they want to achieve with their learning faster, right? All learning has a purpose. Knowing what that purpose is and finding the most direct path there.
Deliberate practice. Okay. Taking action, learning, everything just goes downhill after we figure out what to learn and just keep going. Okay. Last chapter, chapter 10. This is an important one. Overcoming procrastination. We all do it. We all procrastinate on everything until it starts to become pressure in our mind, in terms we have our own kind of forcing function applied to ourselves, and then we take action. But how do we plan ahead? How do we overcome procrastination and execute quicker?
I don't even like the word procrastination because it brings up all of these negative thoughts, right? Everyone can think back to a time where they're procrastinating. I mean, for me, I know it was like in college where I would pull all-nighters where I just did anything but work on my project, and then, oh, an hour before it's due, all right, I got to do this, 1 hour to go. And we self-sabotage ourselves in all of these ways because of our fears. And what this chapter is about is looking our fears in the face and finding ways to work with them, to listen to them, to acknowledge them. And we can systematically overcome these fears that are holding us back from taking the risks that we need to take, right? The biggest risks are the risks not taken. We talked about in part one how successful people are the people who are failing the most. We need to build this muscle of failure is instrumental towards success. I think people too easily identify themselves as procrastinators. And I would let you in on the secret that I work with some of the most successful people in the world and they think of themselves as procrastinators, right? This is clearly something that everyone struggles with. And fortunately, there's so much psychological research here to support that procrastination can be overcome, right? We take a breath, we sit in it. And the formula I use, I call the procrastination equation, right? And so visualize this, you know, motivation equals on the top, expectancy times value on the bottom, impulsiveness times delay. So expectancy, how likely is it do we think we'll receive a reward? Value, how much is this reward worth to us, right? If we increase our odds of success or increase how much success is worth to us, we will naturally become more motivated. On the downside, right? So in the denominator, impulsiveness. What are the other alternatives that are distracting? What are the shiny, you know, candy mountains that we would rather be doing rather than this thing that's important? And then the delay, how long do we think it's going to take until we get rewarded? We find that all these things that we continually put off, it's because we have other things we'd love to do instead. And this thing like, oh, it's going to take so long to get a reward, right? That's why writing a book is so hard, because I put in this effort now and I don't get the reward for years down the line. And once we know what these four levers are, the algorithm is identifying which of these parts is preventing us from getting started and acting directly on that part. Right. And so I outline some specific steps that anyone can do once they've outlined that part. So, for example, increasing expectancy, anything you can do to make yourself believe that you have a better chance of success. The simplest one is just talking to someone who's done it before and having them give you advice. Increasing the value of it, right? Reviewing your goals, creating some external accountability, raising the stakes where it is more painful for you to not take action than to take action. Decreasing impulsiveness. We talked about this before in the attention chapter. Creating constraints around the things that you would want to do instead no longer are options. And then finally, delay. Simply just breaking down any large project into the next component step. This is why in getting things done, it's always, what is the next action? What is the thing that I can do right now? And I literally recommend spending 5 minutes and saying, I'm going to work for the next 5 minutes. And at the end of 5 minutes, I'm going to stop. And if I don't know how I'm going to start it, all right, I'll spend the 5 minutes with a pen and paper just brainstorming ways that I could potentially get started. Right? I can do anything, but it's just getting over that initial hurdle. It's the verb change of I'm going to do this to I am doing this. And the hack is like you can give yourself full permission to stop after that 5 minutes. But once you start, you are likely to continue. So this was such a huge breakthrough to me. I think about how much time I delayed getting started on something out of my fear, and that I take a step back, I step outside myself and say, what am I afraid of? What is preventing me from taking action? I can immediately do something that makes taking action the obvious thing to do, right? I change the equation from acute pain of, oh, this is not going to be enjoyable, to, wow, if I don't take action here, what are the consequences? Or what are the rewards that I'm missing out of, right? Taking advantage of loss aversion. So this chapter is really where all these techniques we've been talking about come together, in that you can create a motivation engine where you can do anything no matter how difficult if you eliminate the things that are in the way of your action.
Beautiful. All right, Chris, this has been a treat. Thank you so much for being part of this bonus episode. Can't wait for people to dive deep into this workbook. What are some other ways that people can follow up and support?
Yeah, I love for anyone who was interested in what we had to say to download the workbook. Pick one of the chapters that really resonates with you right now. Set timer for 30 minutes and take a shot at it, right? I believe very strongly in this, and I'd love for you to prove me wrong. The offer I will make is anyone who spends a half hour working on this, send me results, send me questions, and I'll respond to everyone personally. I check every email I get. It's chris@theforcingfunction.com. Let me know how it's going, and my offer is I will make sure that you get more out of it. I will help you ensure that you install these new habits systems into your life. That's my only ask, is to give it a try, and I would love to make sure that you get the most out of it.
Thanks so much, Chris, for the bonus offer and your time.
My pleasure. I said this has been a pet project of mine for a while, is these patterns that I have recognized in top performers time and time again, how can I convert them into a format that anyone can take action? And my hope is that no matter where you are in your journey, there is something here that will propel you to the next level.
Love it. Thanks so much, Chris.
Thank you.
Thanks again for tuning in to another exciting episode of Portfolio Career Podcast. As a reminder, this episode with timestamp notes to follow along is also available on my website, portfoliocareerpodcast.com. There, you can also record and ask a question related to all things related portfolio career to potentially be included in a future episode. Really excited for you to use these insights to build and grow your portfolio career. And as always, let me know what you think.